welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's yesteryear. Mark Levonier, your host for this hour of crime. Later on, the famous Dragnet from 1955. But first, this is your FBI with the tale, The Big Guy, an ABC episode from May 14th, 1948.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society presents This is Your FBI. This is Your FBI, the official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, presented as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. Before we hear tonight's file, I have a special request for our boy and girl listeners. If your dad or mother is not near the radio now, please tell them that in just 14 minutes, the Equitable Life Assurance Society has an important announcement about home mortgages. Yes, the Equitable Society is going to give full details on their assured home ownership plan. It's a money saver, a worry saver, a home saver. So, will you do that, boys and girls? Tell dad and mother to listen 14 minutes from now for the important information on the Equitable Society's Assured Home Ownership Plan. Tonight's FBI file, The Big Guy.
History has a way of repeating itself, of forming a pattern which recurs at almost regular intervals. For that reason, anyone studying the field of crime today must go back and study the happenings after World War I. There began a rising tide of crime with the coming of peace in 1918, even as there is a rising crime wave today. Criminals banded together and formed what used to be called gangs. The men were identified by the now almost outworded gangsters. But if the word is outmoded, the methods of operation are not. And today, one of the biggest problems facing every law enforcement agency like your FBI is the potential return of the mob. The crime wave can be fought, and fought successfully if the formation of new interlocking groups of criminals can be prevented. Once the ranks are formed, fighting the war against criminals is more difficult, because arresting an underling does not impair the effectiveness of the mob, does not destroy the leader, the man on top. Tonight's file opens in a small apartment in the midtown section of a large eastern city. A short, stubby man is removing his shirt as he talks to a newly arrived visitor.
Sorry you had to wait for me, Charlie. I had to go down to the drugstore to get this stuff.
What is it?
Some mosquito bites. I'm covered with them.
Yeah, I can see them.
You want to rub some of the stuff on my back, Charlie?
Sure.
Oh, I hope it works. Stitch is driving me crazy.
How's that feel?
Oh, great. Get some on my neck, will you?
Okay. How'd the trip go?
Can't you see the condition I'm in? What a trip. Brother, that's the last time I leave this town.
Here. A little right here?
Yeah, right there. The first thing is the train. It's old, it's hot, and it's dirty. Then to make it worse, I draw an old guy sitting next to me who beeps to the conductor when I light a cigar. Can't smoke all the way up.
Oh, fine.
Then I get up there, walk 3 miles to the river. I find a spot behind some weeds and a little clearing.
Mm-hmm.
For 3.5 hours I wait, just sitting there. It was chewed by mosquitoes, bees, and every other bug in the book.
Yeah, I guess that does it.
Thanks.
Lou show up?
Yeah, finally.
What happened?
Came down the river in a canoe. When he was maybe 15 feet away, I let go with both barrels.
He's dead?
Natch.
I'll tell George. He'll be glad Mr. Lou Dillon is out of the way.
Look, when you see George, tell him any time he wants somebody else knocked off, he should please make it indoors.
Morning at the local FBI field office, Special Agent Jim Taylor is standing in front of the teletype machines reading an incoming message when Agent Don Conway approaches.
Jim.
Hmm? Oh, hello, Don. I didn't hear you come up.
There's a girl named Ann Whitman waiting for you at your desk.
You talked to her?
No, she said she wanted to see you.
I called her the other day about Lou Dillon. He's the fellow who violated his federal parole.
Oh?
She's his girl.
Did she know where Dillon was?
No, not specifically. She said that he'd gone hunting someplace upstate.
How long ago?
Last week. She said she'd get in touch with us if she heard from him.
Maybe she has some information now.
Could be. Come on.
Dillon's the man who was sent away for being a lookout on a bank robbery, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right. It was his first conviction, and from what he said, his first crime.
Yeah. You made the arrest, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I thought at the time that Dillon was a nice young fellow who had gone wrong because of circumstances.
I remember your report.
He had a good record in prison. Still in all, after his good record, he's run away. Oh, Don, you'd better stick around while I talk to Miss Whitman, huh?
Okay.
Miss Whitman, sorry to keep you waiting.
Oh, that's all right, Mr. Taylor.
That's Mr. Conway.
We met unofficially a few minutes ago.
Oh, yes, hello.
Have you heard from Lou Dillon, Miss Whitman?
No, sir. But I had a call about an hour ago from the chief of police of a town upstate named Centerville.
What did he want?
Well, he said that one of his men found a canoe in an upstate park. There was a hole in the bottom of it that looked like a shotgun hole. They identified the canoe as one that Lou had been using on his hunting trip.
And was there any trace of Dillon?
No, sir. They're afraid something's happened. Something serious.
Well, how did the police happen to call you?
Well, they said Lou was staying at a lodge, and when he was reported missing, they went there and looked through his papers. They found my name on a letter.
I thought you told me you didn't know where Dillon went.
Well, this wasn't a letter I wrote to him, Mr. Taylor. This was one he was going to send to me.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry.
Do you think that something serious has happened to him, Mr. Taylor?
Well, Miss Whitman, that's difficult to judge. Tell me, do you know of any enemies he had? Anyone who might want to harm him?
Well, no.
It might be one of the men he was in prison with, Jim.
That's possible, Don. Miss Whitman, did the police tell you where the canoe was found?
Yes, I think they said Franklin National Park.
If they did, then that's our case, Jim.
That's right. Don, I think we'd better start investigation on this right away.
Yes?
Mr. Blair, to see you.
Send him right in.
Yes, sir.
Oh, and Miss Williams, hold all calls for the next 10 minutes. I don't want to be disturbed.
Yes, sir.
Hi, Mr. Medford.
Come in, Charlie.
Okay. Well, glad to see you back.
Thanks. It's good to be back, Charlie.
How was the trip?
Very tiring. I covered 10 cities in 10 days.
Hey, did you do any good?
Well, some things were accomplished, but they didn't come easy. You know, Charlie, I wish that some of the people who think that criminal activities are a soft touch could work alongside of me for a week. I think that they'd have found out that those of us who deal in larceny have to work twice as hard for our illicit dollars.
You can say that again. I've been tempted many times myself to turn legit.
Yeah. Ready to get back?
Yeah, I came in yesterday, covered with mosquito bites. He was really steamed about being sent to the country.
Was he successful?
Oh, yeah. Everything went fine.
I'm almost sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Well, you're the one who wanted Lou Dillon knocked off.
Yes, I know. But I was rather fond of that young man.
Then why did you want to see him get it?
For business reasons. He could have gotten us in trouble.
How?
Well, when he was released from prison, he decided to go straight. That made him too big a risk. He knew too much about us.
Oh.
Didn't I hear that he planned to get married?
Yeah, next month.
Probably be quite a blow to the girl. You know her, Charlie?
No. Freddie does.
We'll have Freddie pay a call on her and, you know, bring her some cash. That might make things a bit easier.
Okay.
Oh, and tell Freddie that he's got a bonus coming for killing Dillon.
A bonus?
Yeah. 2 weeks in the country.
Brother, that's a slow train from Centerville.
I know. Did you see the chief of police?
Yes, by the time I got there, he'd already had part of the river dragged.
Find anything?
Well, no trace of Dillon's body, if that's what you mean.
How about anything else?
Oh, they found Dillon's rifle, and it hadn't been fired.
Well, that removes any question of suicide.
We knew before we found the rifle that it wasn't suicide, Don.
How?
Well, the canoe was found downstream.
So?
An examination of it showed that the blast which ripped a hole through it had been fired from the outside.
It still could have been an accident.
Oh, this wasn't any accident, Don.
Well, how do you know?
Well, we've got evidence. Along the bank of the river, at approximately the same place Dillon's gun was picked up, there were indications that someone may have been lying in wait for him. There was a small area of beaten-down grass where someone had been sitting, and sitting quite a long time, too. There were 17 cigarette butts strewn around. We also found footprints leading to this spot and away from it.
I hope they were good enough for impressions.
Yes, yes, they were.
The lab ought to be able to give us some help on this one.
Well, I sent in the cigarette butts and the footprint data on the way up here.
Any idea when we'll get a report?
Well, we went right to work on it.
Jim, does Lou Dillon's girl know about these latest developments?
Yes, I notified her. You know, this case started out to be a simple federal parole violation, Don.
Yeah.
And the way it looks now, it's murder.
Just a moment.
Hello, Ann.
Oh, hello, Fred.
Can I come in?
Yes, come ahead.
I hope you don't mind my dropping by like this.
Why, no.
I had a reason for coming. I just don't know how to say it, I guess.
About Lou, you mean?
Yeah, I just heard about it. It's real tough, Ann. Lou is a great little guy.
Fred, please don't say what. There's still hope that he'll be found.
Oh, sure, sure. What I meant was, well, everybody liked the guy.
I know.
You and him were, planning to get married, right?
Yes.
Well, I got something for you. It's sort of like a wedding present, I guess. Here, you take it, Ann.
Fred, what is this?
Take it.
But I...
Honey, it's dough, a real nice bundle of dough.
What?
Here, look.
What? I don't understand. Fred, why should you give
it? I ain't giving it to you. It's from a guy me and Lou both have worked for.
Who is he?
Well, he don't want his name brought in. Just compliments of a friend.
Fred, I can't take this.
Huh?
I sound ungrateful, I know, and I'm sure the man means well, but I can't possibly accept it.
Honey, that's $500.
Just take it back, Fred, and tell the man thanks.
Well, okay.
And thanks to you, too, for stopping by.
Well, don't mention it. I'll be seeing you, honey.
Get back in, sir. Huh? You heard me.
No.
One of the many shocking things about the tremendous segment of our population confined in the prisons of the nation is that more than 50% of those persons are in prison for at least the second time. Some of them have been returned more than a dozen times. Somewhere there is an answer to why there is more than an even chance that anyone who is sentenced to prison for the first time will ultimately be returned to prison after his release. Possibly part of the answer lies in the fact that the public will not accept an ex-convict into its midst. There are many firms which will not hire a man who has done time. There are some communities which will not allow him to live within their confines. Not every ex-convict wants to lead a perfectly law-abiding life after his release from prison. Some of them are bitter at their treatment by society and want only to inflict revenge. But there are some who honestly want to lead a normal, useful life and to forget the past. It is our duty, the duty of every one of us, to make those men welcome in our ranks and to give them a chance to prove themselves useful members of society. Tonight's file continues at the apartment of Ann Whitman.
Lou. Oh, Lou, darling, this is so wonderful. I just can't believe it. I can't believe you're really
here. I'm here, honey.
Lou, everybody thought you were dead.
Lou, where were you? What happened?
It's kind of a long story.
Look, I know you two want to be alone.
Now, wait a minute. I want you to hear the story, too.
But I have to get back.
Sit down. Listen.
Okay.
What did you hear about me, Ann? What story did you get?
Well, your canoe was found, and there was a shotgun hole in it. The local police reported you missing.
Uh-huh.
And then the FBI investigated. They found evidence that someone was waiting for you. That it wasn't an accident. But someone had shot and killed you.
They were right, Ann. All but the part about being killed.
Someone did shoot you?
Yeah.
Who?
You want to answer that, Freddy?
Huh?
Do you want to tell her who shot me?
How would I know?
I saw you through the weeds, just before you pulled the trigger.
Me?
Uh-huh.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Get out of here!
That's it! Would you pick up his gun, honey?
Yes, sure.
You got anything we can use to tie him up?
Well, I don't have any rope.
Can I use that extension cord?
Oh, sure.
I want to be sure we keep him here after he comes to.
Lou, did Freddy really try to kill you?
Yeah.
But why? You were friends.
He was just taking orders.
From who?
The big guy.
Who's he?
The guy I used to work for.
But why should he
want to... I'm playing it straight, honey. I guess the big guy didn't like that. So he tried to take care of me.
How awful.
He almost did it, too.
What did happen, Lou?
Well, I saw Fred just as he was going to shoot, and I ducked away a little. Only got hit in the shoulder.
Oh.
The canoe went over, and I went underwater and came up some distance downstream. I guess Fred figured he'd really finished me.
Well, why didn't you go back to your lodge?
I knew they'd come after me again. I went to a cabin downstream. Old Trapper lived in it. He took care of me until I felt well enough to leave. There, that ought to hold him. You better keep that gun on him anyway, though, just in case.
Well, where are you going?
I got a call to make.
To the police?
No, not yet. I've got to see the big guy first. When I see the police, I want him to be with me.
Special Agent Conway speaking.
Hello, Don.
Oh, Jim. Where are you?
I'm up in Centerville. I've got some good news, Don. Yeah. Lou Dillon is still alive.
What? How do you know?
I just interviewed an old trapper who has a cabin about 5 miles downstream from where the accident occurred. He said that Dillon stayed with him after he'd been shot.
Well, why didn't he notify the police?
Well, Dillon asked him not to. He claimed it was just a hunting accident.
Where's Dillon now?
He left there earlier today.
Any idea where he's headed?
The trapper believes he said something about going to see his girl.
Oh, this was early today?
That's right.
Well, if that's his destination, he should be at her place by now.
Just about. Oh, Don, has anything come in from the lab yet?
They just called. They'll have all the information for us in about an hour.
Good. Now, look, I'm flying down. I'll go right to Miss Whitman's from the airport. I'll meet you there.
Just a minute. Oh, hello, Mr. Taylor. Come in.
Thanks.
Mr. Conway just got here. He's with Fred Hall.
Fred Hall?
Hello, Jim.
Oh, hi, Don.
This is Fred Hall, Jim. And according to Miss Whitman, Hall is the one who shot Dillon.
Lou got here just in time to catch him and tie him up.
I see him. Where is Dillon?
Miss Whitman said he went to see someone called the Big Guy.
Hmm?
He believes he's the person who ordered Hall to shoot him.
Who is the Big Guy, Hall?
I don't know what she's talking about.
You don't know anybody called the Big Guy?
Never heard of him.
Lou said he wanted to get him and bring him into the police.
Well, that was foolish. Don, let's take Hall down to the office. We'll question him there.
Hello, Mr. Medford.
Lou. Lou Dillon.
That's right. I didn't bother to announce myself. Do you mind?
Well, where did you come from? I thought...
I know. You thought I was dead. I'm afraid Fred gave you a bum steer.
Fred? Well, what do you mean?
Oh, look, don't go into any act. I know the whole deal.
Lou, I don't know what you're talking about.
Fred Hall tried to kill me, Mr. Medford. And you ordered the job. I know this because I just left Fred.
But I haven't seen Fred Hall in 6 months, Lou.
Suppose you tell that to the cops, huh?
Cops?
That's what I came here for, to bring you to headquarters.
Lou, I honestly don't know what this is all about. Obviously, you're under a strain of some sort. It appears to have stimulated your imagination. Now, why don't you be a good boy and go home and get some rest?
I'm not leaving here without you.
That's what you think, kid. Huh?
Thank you, Charlie.
Last time you were arrested. arrested, you were picked up with a man named Charlie Blair. Is Blair the big guy?
I don't know anybody by that name.
Don, I think we've got some ammunition now to use on Mr. Hall.
Did you get something in the lab?
Yes. Paul, listen to this report. It should interest you. Item one. There were 17 cigarette butts found in one spot on the bank of the river where Dillon was shot.
What's that got to do with me?
Well, the laboratory says that the person who smoked those cigarettes has type AB blood. They determined this by analyzing the saliva. The blood test you took a little while ago showed your type matches this.
What does that prove?
AB is a reasonably rare type of blood.
Still don't prove I shot Dillon, does it?
No, it doesn't. Item two. The lab states that footprints found at this ambush were made by a man approximately 5'8" tall, weighing about 170 pounds.
You get that kind of stuff from a footprint?
That's right. Once the laboratory knows how long a stride that person takes and how deep his footprint went...
That still don't prove I did it.
Granted. Item three. Item three was a sample of ground at the scene of the crime. This was analyzed by the lab. From it, they could tell you were there.
How?
Recognize these shoes, huh?
Yeah, they're mine. Where'd you get them?
We got a search warrant. We found them in your apartment.
Have they been to the lab yet, Jim?
Yes. And the report shows that the sample of earth I brought in matches the mud on these shoes.
So what? A lot of guys have shoes with mud on them.
Not that mud, Hall. There isn't another place in the country where you'd find dirt of this exact composition.
I'd say that report proves that you were by the river.
Hall, we've got enough here to have a federal attorney get a conviction. An attempted murder is the same as actual murder. Now, do you want to take this all alone? Do you want to go to jail for life? Do you want to let the man who gave you the orders go free? Start talking.
He's out, Mr. Medford. Real cold.
Good.
What are we going to do with him?
That's pretty obvious, isn't it?
Yeah.
And this time you'd better take care of him yourself.
Okay.
But not in here. It's too messy.
How about the garage?
Well, I'd just as soon he didn't turn up for a while, Charlie.
Suppose I drop him in the river.
Fine.
Shall I move him now?
Yes, take him away. I've got some work to finish.
Okay. Use your freight elevator, huh?
Yes.
It's kind of heavy. Would you open the door?
Oh, sure.
Put him down, Blair.
What?
Go ahead, Jim. I've got them both covered.
Who are you?
We're special agents of the FBI, Medford. We came here for you and Blair.
Dillon's unconscious, Jim, but still breathing.
That's good, but it still doesn't change the charge. You two are still being arrested for attempted murder.
George Medford and Fred Hall were tried in a federal court for attempted murder on government reservation. All three men were sentenced to life imprisonment. And thus, a vicious machine of crime and corruption was broken up by your FBI. It is true that two special agents made the actual arrests in tonight's case. But the evidence from which the convictions were obtained came from the laboratory of your FBI. The laboratory which serves as the unsung hero in a great percentage of cases. As recently as 1932, there was one man in the FBI lab, and he had one microscope with which to work. Today, there are more than 300 trained scientists who examine evidence, who last year examined more than 104,000 pieces of evidence. Those reports helped your FBI to prove the guilt of a great many criminals, and thus help the Federal Bureau of Investigation protect its employer, you, the American people. In just a moment, we will tell you about next week's exciting case from the files of your FBI. Friends, if you were impressed a few minutes ago by what I told you about the Equitable Society's Assured Home Ownership Plan, if the idea appeals to you of a low interest rate first mortgage combined with life insurance to protect your home against death and hard times,
then I suggest that you get in touch with your Equitable representative soon. He'll show you exactly what this plan will do for you personally, how much money it can save you, how much added security it will give you. So contact your Equitable Society representative without delay, or write care of this station to the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States.
Next week, we will dramatize another exciting case from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The dramatic story of a manhunt through a flaming forest. Its subject, a prison break. Its title, The Curious Prospectors.
The incidents used in tonight's Equitable Life Assurance Society's broadcast are adapted from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of persons living or dead is accidental. Tonight, the music was composed and conducted by Frederick Steiner. The author was Jerry Lewis. Your narrator was William Woodson, and Special Agent Taylor was played by Stacey Harris. This Is Your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. This is Larry Keating speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community, and inviting you to tune in again next week at the same time when the Equitable Life Assurance Society will bring you another thrilling story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The Curious Prospectors on This Is Your FBI.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
This Is Your FBI, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 14th of May, 1948 on ABC. You're listening to an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now an episode of Dragnet, which actually has a repeated story title from a broadcast from 5 years previous on the series in 1950. It's The Big Death, and this is the March 29th, 1955 version, heard on NBC and re-released by Armed Forces Radio, the version we'll hear next.
Dragnet. Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a homicide detail. A man has been shot in a cheap hotel in the downtown area. There's no apparent motive for the attack. No lead to the identity of the assailant. Your job? Find him.
It was Tuesday, January 11th. It was cold in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Lorman. My name's Friday. I was on my way into the office, and it was 5:26 a.m. when I got to room 42. Homicide.
Yeah. We just got the call, Skipper. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's on the way in. That's right. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, here he is now. Uh-huh. No, I haven't called him yet. Well, I didn't say anything. Okay, we'll keep in touch with him. Right. Bye.
What do you got, anything?
Yeah, shooting over on 5th. As soon as I check the crime lab, we can roll on.
Mm-hmm. Who's the victim?
A guy named Arthur McNeil. WMA, 62 years.
Did he say anything?
No, he ran out.
Huh?
6 bullets in his head.
The Garnet Hotel was located on 5th Street between Turner and Banning. It was an old, run-down building. A wooden sign over the entrance advertised rooms, 75 cents per night, weekly rates available. Frank and I climbed one flight of wooden stairs that led to the lobby. By the time we'd gotten there, 2 black and white cars had arrived, and the uniformed officers were attempting to restore some sort of order in the place. We talked with them briefly, and then we met Mr. Ted Brendel, the night clerk who'd placed the original call.
I know what's going on, I tell you. No reason he'd try to hide nothing. I ain't mixed up in it.
We didn't say you were.
What?
I say we didn't say you were involved. We just want to find out what happened here.
Oh, come on into office. Can't hear a word you're saying. Come on. Talk in the office. Now then, fella, you can hear yourself talk. Sit down.
Thank you.
Just throw the clothes on the floor, toss them down, take a seat.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Now about the shooting?
I was just finishing up, and all of a sudden I hear these noises, you know, like pow, pow, loud, sharp.
Yeah.
Wasn't sure what they was at first. A lot of noise around here all the time. People falling out of bed, bottles breaking, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was loud enough, though. I figured I ought to take a look, so I went upstairs.
Yeah.
A couple other people were out in the halls, trying to find out what the hullabaloo was all about. Wasn't anything to let anybody know.
Yes, sir.
Then I come to Mr. McNeil's room, 319 on the left.
Mm-hmm.
Door was open, wide. I looked in. There he was.
McNeil?
Yes, sir. Laying right on the floor. Just kind of sprawled around like he'd just dropped there.
Yeah.
I called to him. He yelled. Light wasn't on the room. Couldn't see too good. Didn't know right off. Then I went in.
Yes, sir.
Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Called the cops. Told him it was a killing. Said for him to come right then.
Did you go in the room at all?
Well, just to look at Mr. McNeil. As soon as I saw what happened, I turned around, ran to the phone, called the cops.
What can you tell us about this, McNeil?
Oh, not much to say. Quiet. Didn't cause no trouble. Didn't drink. Paid his rent on time.
Mm-hmm. You have any relatives in town that you know of?
Didn't hear him say nothing.
Is there anything else you might tell us about
him? No, nothing right off.
All right, thank you.
You going up to see the room now?
That's right.
Sure don't make much sense.
What's that?
Why anybody do it? Plain little guy. Nothing about him make him stand out, take any notice.
Mm-hmm.
Mind his own business. Got along with all the guests. Wasn't anybody paid any attention to him.
You got it wrong.
What?
Somebody did.
A.M. The crew from the crime lab arrived and began their investigation of the murder room. A canvas of the area was started in an attempt to find somebody who might have seen the killer. Frank and I went up to room 319. The appearance of the room indicated that there had been a struggle before McNeil was killed. Clothing was scattered around the floor. Tables were overturned. The bedding had been ripped from the bed and then torn apart. Pictures had been removed from the wall. Books were scattered all around the place. The drawers from the small desk in the bureau had been ransacked. Papers had been thrown around. While Lieutenant Lee Jones continued his investigation, Frank and I talked with the night clerk, Ted Brendel.
Do you know if McNeil carried large sums of money?
Huh?
Did McNeil carry much money with him, would you know?
Don't know if I can answer that. He never did flash any of it around. Guess he had enough to live on, though. Told you before, he always paid his rent on time.
Yeah. Do you have any close friends you know of?
Only met one.
Who was that?
Girl.
You know her name?
Well, ain't exactly a girl either. Guess she's around 50. A couple of times, McNeil took her out to a movie or something. They came in, he went upstairs, changed his clothes, and her and me, we talked.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he saw something kind of interesting in her. Myself, I couldn't, though. Kind of dumpy, you know?
Mm.
Seemed to like her, though. A couple other times, he talked about her, said how she was so nice, seemed to understand him.
How about her name?
Let me think for a minute. Clara. Yeah, it seemed like that was it. Clara.
You know where we can get in touch with her?
Well, the way I remember, she lived in a hotel down the street near 6th.
Do you know the name of the place?
Eldridge, I think it was. Not real sure. If you ask down there, they ought to be able to tell you, though. Name's Clara or something.
What if we could use your phone?
Sure, in the lobby downstairs.
I'll call. All right.
Hey, you gotta have a dime. It's a payphone.
Yes, sir.
Gee, they sure made a mess.
Did McNeil get much mail while he was here?
No, a couple of letters.
You know who they were from?
Some law company here in town. Must have been good. You know how they have the name printed up in the corner of the envelope?
Yeah.
Embossed. Must cost him something.
You remember the name?
No, can't get a picture.
Did McNeil drive a car?
Used to take a streetcar to work. Know that because he used to talk about the people he met. He got real sore when it rained. Told me he couldn't stand the smell of wet wool. Said there ought to be a law that nobody could wear wool clothes when it rained.
Well.
He was a funny little guy. Got real definite ideas about things.
That's so?
Oh, yeah. Made up his mind and stuck to it. Like the envelope.
Well, what's that?
The envelope he had a couple of days ago. Wanted to put it in the hotel safe. Told him he didn't have one, just got the steel boxes. You know, one for each room in case the guests want to check something.
Yeah.
And we got those. And when he found out, he decided to keep the envelope himself.
He tell you what was in it?
No, just acted kind of mysterious, like it had something real valuable inside. When he found out there wasn't safe, he told me he'd keep it with him.
But he didn't give you any idea what was in the envelope?
No, no, just plain white, little, you know, like you mail a letter in.
Yeah.
How about to find a woman?
Yes, sir. See you in a minute, John. Yeah. Want to excuse us?
Sure.
Leah. I'll check the hotel. The woman's name is Clara Fabian.
Yeah.
She checked out 30 minutes ago.
Say where she's going?
No. Clerk said she was pretty upset.
Yeah.
Said something about a death in the family.
Frank and I went over to the Eldridge Hotel. We talked to the manager, and he told us that the Fabian woman had left hurriedly. We checked her room, but we found nothing to indicate where she might have gone. We called the office and had the name run through R&I. We found she had a record listing several drunk arrests and two convictions on bunco charges. Her picture was pulled and shown to Ted Brendel. He identified her as McNeil's friend. From her package, we obtained the name of a sister living in the Los Angeles area. 7:21 a.m., Frank and I drove out to talk to her. At first, she refused to tell us anything, but after questioning, she admitted that she'd heard from Clara Fabian that morning. She'd called to say that she was checking into a hotel on South Spring Street. When we got to the place, the desk clerk told us we'd find her in the coffee shop.
I guess that's her. Yeah, matches the description.
Yeah.
Clara Fabian?
Yeah. What do you want?
Police officers would like to talk to you.
I want nothing to do with no cops.
This is my partner, Frank Smith. My name is Friday.
I told you, I don't want to talk to you. Go away.
Fred, we can't do that.
Why? Some kind of law? Don't know what you're after, but I ain't going to help you. And my filler guys like you all the time giving me nothing but trouble. I'm clean. Don't owe nobody nothing. Now leave me alone.
You know a man named Arthur McNeil?
I'm going to get out of here.
All right, Miss Fabian. If you don't want to talk here, we'll go downtown.
What about McNeil?
You know him?
Yeah.
When did you see him last?
About midnight.
Where?
We had dinner. A couple of drinks. I drove him home.
How well do you know him?
He wants to get married.
Do you know where he worked?
At his own place. Some kind of chemicals.
Can you give us the address?
What are all the questions about? Something wrong?
Police matter.
Why don't you tell me what this is about? Questions you're asking. For all I know, I might be saying the wrong thing.
Well, if you tell us the truth, you won't be saying the wrong thing.
Well, I got your word on that. What's the matter? Something happened to Arthur?
Yeah.
What?
He had an accident.
Where? Down at the chemistry place?
No, at his hotel.
What did he do? Fall down the stairs?
No.
Wouldn't be surprised the way he lushed up last night. Boy, I never saw him so loaded.
That's all?
Yeah. A couple of drinks and he's on his way to outer space. Only takes two or three.
Mm-hmm.
He had more than that when I met him. Some kind of a celebration.
What for?
Hmm?
What was he celebrating?
Some kind of an invention he was working on. Told me it had taken him over 5 years, but he did it. Said we'd be on the easy street. Big pictures about the money pouring in, all we could use.
Yeah.
That's what caused the fight.
Mm-hmm.
You see, all the time we've been going together, he's been giving me that line about lots of money. How he was going to make this invention and be a millionaire all the time, talking like that.
Yeah.
One look at him, and you know it was all in his head, nothing to it. I told him to stop it. Told him 100 times. Didn't do any good. Finally blew up. I couldn't take no more.
This was last night, huh?
Yeah. We had dinner and he showed me an envelope. Said it was the invention in it. Big deal. He was going to be rich. Went on and on about it. I tell you, I think he was a little cracked. Wanted to drive to Vegas right then, get married. 10:30, and he wanted to leave then.
Is that right?
I told him he was off the beat. I got it right to his face.
Uh-huh.
Made him mad. Real sore. I think a lot of it was the booze. You know, courage. He can't handle drinking at all.
Yeah.
Told me that if I didn't go with him right then, we'd call the whole thing off, stop seeing each other.
Mm-hmm.
I told him it was all right with me. Never meant to get married anyway. It's something to do to pass the time. I wouldn't have really got married.
What happened then?
I took him home. Dropped him at the hotel.
When'd you go then?
Back to my place, got ready for bed. Guess it was about 11 when he called, real mad. Carried on, yells and screamed and said I'd be sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't take it anymore and hung up right while he was talking. A couple of minutes later, he called back. I wouldn't answer the phone, and then when it stopped ringing, I told the boy at the desk not to ring my room anymore.
Yeah.
It didn't bother me at first, and then I got to thinking about it, a little crackpot. I tried to do something, so I decided to get out.
That's why you left the hotel?
Yeah, the way he was lushed up, things he said, no way of knowing if he was going to cause any trouble. All I knew was that I didn't want no part of it.
Yeah.
It's an accident. Something serious?
Yeah, that's right.
In the hospital?
No.
And how bad did he hurt?
Bad as you can get.
This isn't a joke, is it?
No, it's no joke.
If it is, I don't think it's very funny.
It's no joke, lady.
He dead?
That's right.
He do it himself?
Looks like he had some help.
Poor little guy. It's kind of funny to think about it now. I used to figure he was cute the way he was always bringing me presents. Oh, not big, you know, but like a bunch of flowers or a book, little thing.
Mm-hmm.
Funny to think about it. I can hardly imagine him being dead, poor little guy. You know who did it?
Not yet, no.
We hope you might be able to help us.
Why me?
Nobody seems to know much about him. We can't find any close friends. Nobody would want to see him dead.
Well, he never talked about anybody to me.
Did he ever mention a lawyer to you?
No.
Can you give us any idea where he worked?
Well, you mean the chemistry place?
If that's the place, yeah.
Uh-uh. Never said exactly. I think it was some kind of store, though, with the windows painted. He talked about the invention, said he had all the stuff to make it with, but he never told me where it was.
All right. Anything else you can tell us about?
No, nothing.
All right, thanks, Miss Fabian.
For what?
For what you have been able to tell us.
It don't seem like it's going to be any help. Are you sure this ain't some kind of a joke?
No, ma'am.
And he's really dead.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, poor little guy.
Well, if you think of anything, we'd appreciate a call. We'll leave you one of our cards.
Oh, thanks. I remember something, I'll sure let you know.
All right.
Can you tell me how it happened?
He was shot.
Oh, maybe it was an accident. You know, whoever did it didn't mean to.
No, that's not likely.
Maybe. You've heard where a gun goes off, somebody killed. All the time you read about in the papers. Gun goes off accidentally?
No, not six times. Frank and I went back to the office. We called the crime lab and talked with Lieutenant Lee Jones. He told us that they'd been unable to find anything we could use at the scene of the killing. He said that the victim had been shot with a .38 caliber revolver. In going over the room, his crew had found several items of value. In light of this, there was a possibility that the motive for the killing was not robbery, as we'd thought before. Lieutenant Jones said that the coroner had called, and he said that he'd found over $100 in cash on the body of the victim, also a wristwatch and an expensive ring. In one of the pockets of the coat McNeil was wearing, the crew from the crime lab had found an address book. Jones said he was sending it over to us. The canvas of the area had netted us nothing. None of the people in the immediate vicinity had seen anything out of the ordinary at the time of the killing. We contacted the stats office and asked them to make a run on the method of operation. Until we could come up with a motive for the slaying, there was little we could do to apprehend the killer. Additional men had been sent out from the office to interrogate the other people in the hotel. They reported that they'd found nothing to aid us. 10:47 a.m.
Well, we're sure building zeros.
We sure are. There's not much to go on.
Nothing.
I got it. Homicide Friday. Yes, sir. That's right. Well, how'd you hear about it? Yeah. Yes, sir, we would. What's that? All right. As soon as we can get there. Yes, sir. Goodbye. Might have a break, maybe.
Hmm?
Man says he's McNeil's lawyer.
What's he got?
First step.
Huh?
The reason McNeil was killed. Frank and I left the city hall and drove over to the address I'd been given on the phone. After a few minutes' wait, we were shown into George Casper's office. We identified ourselves, and he asked us to sit down.
Terrible thing to have happen.
Yes, sir?
I heard about it on the car radio this morning while I was coming to work.
You're Mr. McNeil's attorney, are you?
Yes. Have been for over 10 years.
Mm-hmm. On the phone, you said that you knew why he was killed.
That's right. I feel a little silly about it now that you're here. All seems pretty melodramatic.
Like, tell us about it?
It's McNeil's formula.
What, sir?
For the past 8 years, McNeil's been working on a new type of explosive for commercial use.
I see.
Supposed to have a lot of advantages. Easy to carry, minimizes the danger of accidental firing. The way he painted it, it'd answer a lot of problems in building.
Mm-hmm.
He called me the day before yesterday, said it was finished. He'd completed the final laboratory experiments.
Yeah.
Went on about how it was going to make a fortune for him.
Mm-hmm. Had he talked to anyone about it?
I'm not sure, but knowing McNeil, I imagine he did.
Why'd he say that?
Well, these experiments got to be an obsession with him, about the only thing that mattered. A couple of times when we were out someplace, he'd have a few drinks and start talking about the explosive, loud enough for anyone near him to hear it.
Mm-hmm. Do you know where he worked?
Yes, small place out in the valley. I can give you the address if you want it.
Yes, sir, we'd appreciate that.
Have you any idea who might have killed him?
No, sir, we're working on it.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anybody he was close to?
You mean socially?
That or in business?
No, can't think of anyone. There was a girl. He spoke several times of marrying her. Sorry, but I can't tell you any more than that. I don't know her name.
All right, fine, Mr. Casper.
Does he have any relatives here in town?
No, he made a will several months ago. Left everything to one of the industrial schools. Not much. Lab equipment, a few books.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you can tell us about?
No, I'm afraid not. Most of the time he's pretty quiet, kept to himself. Once in a while he'd go on a bender, might last a couple of days. When he was on one of those drinking bouts, he'd get in some kind of trouble. Loud talk, something like that. Nothing serious.
All right, sir. If you'll give us that address, we won't take up any more of your time.
Yes, of course. You can understand why I felt a little silly about calling you.
What's that, sir?
Explosives, spies. Sounds like something in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't imagine there's anything to it, though. As far as I know, McNeil might not even have finished the formula. Might have been just another of his stories.
Yeah, that's right.
He was always telling whoppers. I guess a psychiatrist would say he was trying to find some way of justifying himself.
Is that right?
Seemed to be a big thing with him. To find a way of making himself heard about.
Well, kind of looks like he found it. Frank and I went back to the office and met with Captain Lorman. We discussed the possibility of McNeil being killed by somebody who wanted the chemical formula. Because of the potential value of the explosive, federal authorities were notified, and they sent a team of men out to aid in the investigation. The next morning, Wednesday, January 12th, we picked up a list of similar crimes from the stats office. In checking out the victims, we got the same description of the thief from each one of them. They all described him as a white male American, 32 years, 165 pounds. In each case, the thief had followed the victims and attacked them as they entered their homes. The last robbery had taken place 3 weeks before on December 23rd. During the commission of the crime, the victim had been wounded. The bullet had been removed and held at the crime lab as evidence. 8.02 a.m. Frank and I put in a call to Lieutenant Jones. 8.26 a.m. Might be late.
Yeah.
I get it. Homicide Friday. Kelly. You check him? How about it? Yeah, sure is. Yeah. Now all we got to do is to make it do some good. All right. Thank you, Lee. Bye.
What's he got?
Well, he checked the bullet from the last robbery against the ones that killed McNeil.
Yeah.
Same gun. Additional local broadcasts and APBs were gotten out carrying the description of the holdup man. Victims were asked to come to the city hall and recheck the mug books in the hope that they might be able to identify him. A check of McNeil's workshop failed to disclose any evidence that he'd been working on an explosive. A week went by without any new developments. Thursday, January 20th, Frank and I got back to the squad room.
My house here looked for a while like it was going to go.
Yeah, it did. I got it. Homicide Friday. Yeah, Jim. Mm-hmm. When? Might be. Right. Right now. Right. Jim Austin, robbery. We just got back from a call out in Westwood.
Yeah?
Thief fits our description pretty good. Austin thinks it might be the same guy.
They get him?
No. Something just as good.
What do you mean?
He dropped a hotel key. Frank and I went over to room 27A and we met with Sergeant Jim Austin. He gave us the details of the robbery. From the way the holdup man operated and the description given by the victim, he was the man we were looking for. In getting away from the scene, he dropped a key to a downtown hotel room. We checked the address in the phone book, and then we left the city hall. It was a small place on South 4th Street. We identified ourselves to the manager and told him why we were there.
Yes, it's one of our keys.
Can you tell us who has the room?
Yes, Ralph Otley.
And what does Otley look like?
Oh, he's a nice young fella, blonde. Guess he's about 30 years old.
How long has he been here?
You mean regular?
That's right.
About 5 months, a couple of times before that for a couple of months. He came back, though.
See him now?
No, I haven't seen him since this morning. Left about 7:30.
Does he have a job?
Oh, he never told me nothing about it.
What's he do for a living?
Well, I guess you'd say he was kind of a promoter.
What do you mean?
Well, he goes around trying to line things up, figures some way to make a killing. He hit it pretty good on a deal last year, and he's been living on the money since then, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to talk to him about?
Police business.
Not in trouble, is he?
We better talk to him about that.
Well, look, if he's done anything wrong, the hotel didn't know a thing about it. He paid his rent. He didn't cause any trouble here. Now, we didn't have any part in it.
Well, don't worry about it. What if we could see his room?
You mean go through it?
We'd like to take a look at it, yeah.
Well, I guess it's all right. You being cops, sure, I'll give you the key.
You better come with us.
Well, I ain't going to tell him nothing. He comes in while you're upstairs. I won't tell him anything.
No, sir, that's not the idea. We'd like you to be in the room when we check it.
Oh, well, sure. Okay, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
You really figure that there's something wrong with this, Otley, huh?
No, we're not sure.
You know, come to think about it, there could be.
Why do you say that?
Just because the way he lives, he'd have to make a lot of money to live the way he does. A fellow makes that much, he usually tells everybody how he did it. You know, show how smart he is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Otley never says anything, just that he made it, not how. He wouldn't let anybody in on a good thing.
Well, maybe he's got a reason.
Hmm?
Not such a good thing. In the company of the manager, Frank and I checked the suspect's room. In one of the bureau drawers, we found a box of shells for a .38 pistol. There were also several items that had been listed as stolen in previous robberies. We returned to the lobby of the hotel and we waited for Otley to come in. 4:30 p.m., 5, 5:30, 5:45.
Joe.
Yeah.
Hi, Sid.
Hello, Mr. Otley.
Hey, I lost my key someplace. You got another one?
Yes, sure, I have.
Might have left it in the room. I'll check.
Sure.
Now, let's go.
Yeah. Any calls for me today?
No, no, sir. No calls.
Stand still, Otley. Police officers.
Hey, what are you doing?
Don't turn around.
I'll take them.
Yeah. 38 revolver.
Hey, what's this all about? I haven't done anything.
Get your hands back at me.
Hold still. You know you got the wrong guy.
You keep telling us that.
Taking me in for robbery, huh?
That's one of them.
What do you mean?
We're booking you for suspicion of murder.
Robbery, that's all you got me for. I'm not going to stand no killing beef.
You keep believing that.
I will. You're going to tag me with anything more than a 211.
No, let's go.
Grab him, Frank.
Hey.
Wait a minute. Hold it up, Otley, or I'll shoot.
Why did you kill me, cop? Why?
You're lucky.
That's all you know. I'd have been better off, a lot better. You should have killed me.
All right, come on. We'll take you down to George Street Hospital.
I didn't mean to shoot the old man.
Is that so?
Yeah. He wouldn't give me the money. He kept saying he didn't have any.
Yeah.
I heard him talking about how he was loaded. He could have just given it to me. No trouble if he'd just give me the
all
money.
All right, settle down. You're not hurt bad.
Well, he started yelling. I had to shoot him. I had to. It wasn't any other way. You should have killed me. That's why I took off so you'd kill me. I wish you had a...
Well, don't worry about it.
Huh?
Maybe it'll turn out that way.
The story you've just heard is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent. Ralph Neville Ottley was tried and convicted of murder in the first degree and received sentence as prescribed by law. The jury returned a recommendation of mercy, and the suspect was sentenced to life imprisonment at the state penitentiary, San Quentin, California.
You have just heard Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action, and starring Jack Webb, a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Dragnet, on Tuned to Yesterday at NBC and Armed Forces Radio Service broadcast from March 29, 1955. And that wraps up this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBounier. Thanks for listening.